Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Meet the next generation of podcast stars with SiriusXM's Listen Next program, presented by State Farm. As part of their mission to help voices be heard, State Farm teamed up with SiriusXM to uplift diverse and emerging creators. Tune in to Stars and Stars with Issa as host Issa Nakazawa dives into birth charts of her celeb guests. This is just the start of a new wave of podcasting. Visit statefarm.com to find out how we can help prepare for your future. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And now, prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
SiriusXM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I'll say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast with host A. Trunk.
Hey, everybody, it's Eddie Trunk. Welcome to another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New episodes every Thursday. Be sure to subscribe so you do not miss an episode, and thank you for doing so. And as I tell you guys every week, all the audio and all the interviews that you hear on the Eddie Trunk Podcast, well, they all originate as my radio show. They all happen live on SiriusXM, and that is Channel 103, Faction Talk. Hear me live there daily, Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern, noon to 2 Pacific, talking rock with you. You're only listening to the podcast, and you can get SiriusXM. You're only getting a tiny fraction of what I do on the radio every day. Hope you come on board and join me for the live radio show, Trunk Nation, on Faction Talk 103, or anytime you can listen to full shows, audio, video, more on the SiriusXM app. Be sure to follow me on social media, at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook page for info and updates. We got two interviews for you this week, both with artists who have just released new records. We'll start with Phil Lewis, the lead singer of LA Guns. Brand new album just came out called Black Diamonds from Phil and LA Guns. It is, I believe, the third or fourth since he reunited with Tracy Guns. They've been making some really good new music lately. Just played a sold-out record release party show at the Whiskey in L.A. We'll talk to Phil Lewis one-on-one. He joined me in my Las Vegas studio. Phil's lived in Vegas for a long time. It was great for him to come by. And a lot of people really enjoyed this very revealing interview. Very candid, very honest from Phil Lewis, who in a lot of ways is really one of the most underrated singers from the 80s, no doubt. Still has a phenomenal voice. Second this week, we're going to bring in extended episode. We've got the new lineup of a band called Revolution Saints, which is a trio, a supergroup of sorts. It previously included a lineup of Doug Aldrich and Jack Blades joining Journey drummer Dean Castronovo, who not only plays drums, but also sings lead vocals. Well, Doug Aldrich and Jack Blades are both out of the band now, and they've been replaced by Jeff Pilson of Dokken and Foreigner fame, and Joel Hoekstra of Whitesnake fame, with Dean Castronovo remaining as the drummer and singer. So we'll talk to the new lineup of Revolution Saints, Pilson, Hoekstra, and Castronovo together, all three together, and that'll be second in the podcast. By the way, there was video captured of that interview. If you are a SiriusXM subscriber, you can go to the app and listen to that and watch that as well. But we'll start off with Phil Lewis of LA Guns. This was done prior to the new album being released. It is now available in stores, so we thought we'd bring it to you as a podcast. Enjoy. Speaking of guests, an old friend has dropped by. The first time I've had the pleasure of welcoming him to my Vegas place. and he is the lead singer of LA Guns, Mr. Phil Lewis. Good to see you, buddy.
Hi, Eddie. Finally, I finally got invited. It's nice to be here
always,
in Eddie World.
You're always invited. Come on, man. We've seen each other a lot.
I know, it's
true.
We haven't
done the radio thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was telling the audience, I was looking forward to having you because the last couple LA Guns records, Tracy was doing all the interview stuff.
Sure.
And he was doing a lot of, and I love talking to Trace, so no problem. But I said, I'm here in Vegas. You're in Vegas. Let's see if we can get Phil over
That's
for a
fantastic.
Bit.
That's fantastic. I'm glad you did. There's a lot to talk about. There's this record and what's coming up and what we've been through, and I look forward to it.
Yeah. Well, real quick, before we get into all of that, we were talking about this city, and how long ago did you relocate to Vegas? Because there's a big rock scene now.
Unbelievably.
But when did you got here early.
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe it's like I'm coming up to a decade. I mean, I'm over 5 years. It's about 7 years. And I cannot believe how quickly the time has gone here. And I don't regret it at all. I can still do business in LA. I sometimes I have to be in LA two times in the same week. Obviously, I stay there. But you know, like sometimes I've got to do that drive like three times in a month. And that's fine. That's no big deal. It's you accept that when you move out here, and no regrets at all.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking about that because now so many have come out here, but you were one of the first, and you came here from LA, right?
Yes, I did.
And now everybody is making that relocation.
Why not? I mean, especially from LA, it's like half the price.
Yeah,
and it's got a scene here.
Yeah,
it's got a good scene. The end of like the Chris Angel Christmas holiday,
right? Which you played at and I hosted.
It was absolutely fantastic. You don't get stuff like that in LA no more,
right?
You know, there just seems a much better vibe in Vegas. People don't mind spending money. There are nice things. In LA, it's about you know how can I get it for nothing? How can I blag this? How can I get my talk my way into here? And Vegas is quite a different vibe, which I got to say I prefer.
So the new album is coming. What's the exact release date on Black Diamonds?
April 12th, I think it is.
April 12th. So we're about 6 weeks out from the record coming out. A couple songs released already from the record.
Yeah.
I know that Tracy is insanely prolific because it seems like every time after you guys have finished a record, he's already sending me riffs and check this out for the next LA Guns record. And then the other things, he's constantly pumping stuff out. But it's all good. As I said before, there's very few bands, and I've said this many times on the air, that are making music right now that I think, who'd been around 40 years or whatever, that lives up to what they did back in the day. And the records since you and Tracy have reunited have been phenomenal.
Right. I'm looking forward to this new Skid Row record. They're the another band that has been...
Well, that's out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's been out
the new
for
guy.
A bit. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I've got a lot of respect for them.
Real good record.
New stuff, looking out, always looking out for new people, breaking in new talent. But yeah, it...
How have you felt about all of this since... What year did... The Missing Piece was the first one,
so
right?
We're coming up to our fifth. Actually, I think we passed our fifth anniversary since...
Since you guys got back...
Since the reunion.
Right.
And once again, boy, that time has gone really, really quickly.
Yeah.
Because we've been busy and you know, Tracy set up a deal with Frontiers to give him a bunch of records and knowing full well that he's capable of writing it and he's very disciplined. As far as this record goes, he wrote most of it in Denmark between 9 a.m. and noon every day when he would just lock himself away in his room. The kid was at school and she was doing whatever. And he would just... concentrate for 3 hours and because he's playing guitar all day anyway, he goes, oh, I remember that riff that I came up with on Tuesday, you know, with a heavy influence from Led Zeppelin here or two.
Yeah, of course.
And it's all good. And you know, for me personally, he is prolific and he builds these fantastic machines and I love driving them.
Mm.
That's how I see it. When I hear the raw track, and it's like, oh my God, this is going to be so good.
What about you as a writer? What are you? You're contributing lyrics, or are others helping with lyrics?
We got definitely. We have other people involved in the band behind the scenes. Adam Hamilton is our recording drummer, but he doesn't tour because he's a producer he'd much rather do that. We've got Mitch Davis in New York, who I record all my vocals with, who's heavy into the lyrics and helps me out enormously. In terms of the music, it's not just Tracy. Johnny's bringing in songs. Ace is bringing in songs. He's not a tyrant. Mm-hmm. If you got a good song, if you got a good idea,
right,
then it's going to make the album.
Right.
And for me, Ace has got a song on this album. It's called Like a Drug. I think it's the very last song on it. For me, that's my favorite song on the record. I like his stuff. He's got that sort of punky sensibility.
Well, I noticed that in listening to this record already, that to me, and I really love these records you've made with this reunion, as I've said, but this record to me feels a little more of a punky, raw edge to it.
Right.
Kind of in line with like what I was catching on the very first record. You know, very raw, loose kind of attitude to it, a little bit. Not to say the others were super glossy or anything, but this one seemed to have that punky edge just a little bit more even.
Well, the one before it, the Checker Past, has got to be the weirdest album of my life, the weirdest album of my career, staying at home and doing it remotely,
right?
Just like how, the same kind of thing you've got going here,
right?
And that was a challenge, you know, to have like two sides of the brain working, the creative side, and then having to do the technical side. And it turned out okay. I mean, because the material was good, the songs were good, but oh my God, it was such a fucking epiphany being back in the same room together and looking, and especially recording on the tour bus during the summer, during the Kiefer tour. Having days off or long days before in between sound checks and whatever, having a lot of time basically on the road. 23 hours you've got to kill. 23 hours you've got that 1 hour. So we were doing a lot of recording and having a lot of fun, and the songs were coming together, and it was just the antithesis. It was complete opposite of the lonely, sad record we were all writing in our bedrooms before.
Right, right. Since this has all happened and you and Tracy have come back together, I don't think, because of the history of the band and so many lineup changes and so much stuff that's gone on over the decades, I don't know if a lot of people would have expected, and of course the well-documented falling out between the two of you guys. I mean, everybody remembers when you guys were on my TV show and one day you killed him and the next year he killed you and all of that.
I know.
So given no one would think this would
terrible.
Last.
I mean, and it was so disingenuous to our fans, and we realized almost immediately, we're like, what are we doing? Why have we been this estranged for so long? We've got such great chemistry, we've both got so much to give, and it's what our fans want. And once we buried that hatchet, we really, really got rolling. And I know this is the band, the funny band with over 57 members. 60 member. I don't know. That's not the point. It all comes down to two. And that's me and that's him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the nucleus. And, you know, band's different now. It's not like the old days where you were in a band, you were in that band for your whole career. It's more fluid now. If you got a record deal, you were set up for life. There aren't those deals anymore. As a musician, you're like an independent contractor. You got to hustle. You got to work different angles, and I think that the public have a bit of a hard time understanding the actual workings, the logistics, and the reality of being in a band. And of course, if you're in a band like us, and you happen to take 6 months off, you're going to lose members. You can't keep people on without paying them on a retainer.
Right, of course.
So that. You know, and because we've been around for such a long time, that explains why And plus, there's two versions going at the same time.
Right.
So the numbers are just going ping, 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 all these like different members coming and going. But as I say, it comes down at the end of the day to the nucleus, which is me and him.
When you talk about two versions, are you satisfied with the way the situation was resolved between you guys and Riley's band?
I think so, because let's be clear, they were after us. There was no question, no doubt in them. I've got them on record saying we have as much right to the name as they do, talking about us, which is absolute baloney. There was no way we could not stop what we were doing and address that, no matter what it costs, no matter what we had to do. Because it's over. It'll kill us.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to come up with something, and we did. We came up with a solution. I suppose it's fair. LA Guns is Tracy's baby. It has been his baby since like 1985.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a bunch of guys from back east getting together with a grudge, isn't that you're doing it all for, you're doing it for the wrong reason. That's not LA Guns.
I want to ask you about you a little bit, because I said this before you got here today. I listen to the records, of course, but I see you play live a lot.
Yeah.
And I always enjoy it. I love how raw and real and live it is. I think, and I'm not saying this to blow smoke up your ass because you're sitting here, I truly think you are amazingly underrated as a singer. I always thought you had a phenomenal voice, a very cool voice, and remarkably, now I believe you're in your mid-60s, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
It still hasn't left you. Nothing
Thank
has
you very
left
much.
You. Can you talk about how,
yeah,
your
sure.
vocal influence and how you keep your voice? Is it just natural? Do you have to work at it?
You know, underrated, I think that's fair, because you know, when I first started, I wasn't very good to, really, you know.
You mean started with LA Guns,
no,
or going back to Girl,
like,
or really
Girl,
early on,
you know, like when I first decided to be a singer, I was going to play soccer. I came home one evening, and Top of the Pops was on TV in London, and Alice Cooper's doing Schools Out. I dropped to my knees and I never played soccer again in my life.
That was the moment.
That was
Everybody's
the,
got the moment.
That, you know, I could absolutely bottle that moment. And I've told Alice about it, and he cracks up, and he always reminds me whenever I see him. But yeah, that was it. He ruined me. So I decided, okay, so I want to be a musician. I want to be a singer, but I don't know anything about music and I don't sing. So it was, you know, a learning process, and I learned in public, and it's okay, because so did Rod Stewart. You listen to the early Rod Stewart stuff, it's not very good either, and I've gradually got better. My influences are very sort of English. They're like sort of Steve Marriott, Alex Harvey, very much the English rock climate, The Who, Wishbone Ash.
Did you take vocal lessons?
I took
as a kid.
No. I took I had a voice coach. I lost my voice on tour, and Don Lawrence. They flew Don Lawrence out. I guess it must have been like during 1990 or so.
Oh, you're talking about with LA Guns?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But back when you were starting to sing,
yeah,
and
no.
figuring out, you're saying you were into soccer and what have you. You see Alice Cooper,
yeah.
You want to be a singer,
yeah.
And you just went for it.
Yeah.
You found a voice.
Right.
You didn't go get lessons. You didn't learn.
My partner in the band was Jerry Laffey. So we were both playing guitar. And like, we got to get a singer. And then we're like, well, one of us got to be the singer. So we flipped a coin and I lost. So I had to become the singer.
Was Girl your first band?
Yeah.
That was the first thing that you did?
Yeah.
And for people that don't know, two albums that Girl put out that were really, really good records, Phil Collin from Def Leppard.
Yeah,
now,
that's right.
Phil,
that was our baby band.
That was you were both in that.
Yeah, and like 1980, we were all in our 20s. And we were just having a laugh. And honestly, we didn't think we were very good. Phil was good. Phil was, when he joined the band, it was like, oh shit, we got to step it up a bit. But, you know, my instincts were good. And you know, I was listening. I mean, like Tina Turner was probably my favorite singer at the time. If I can just sound like Tina Turner, I'll be all right. If I can sound like Steve Marriott. But of course, these are seasoned singers. So it's taken a while, but I'm getting there.
Yeah.
But thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Coming from you, that's high praise indeed.
No, and my audience says it too. And anybody that has seen you sing live knows that you still seemingly have full capability of your voice. Do you feel like you're as strong as you've ever been? Do you feel like you've lost anything?
Much stronger.
Stronger?
I'm convinced, you know, because I'm more disciplined now. I'll do my warm-ups prior to the show. I'll chill out after the show. I'll do whatever is required. I mean, I tell you, this last tour, this summer tour that we did with Kiefer, the East Coast tour, I haven't done anything like that since my 30s. 6 weeks solid, 2 months solid on the road.
Mm.
And it was like, damn, okay. And towards the end is when it got really intense, when I had to do like 5 and 6 shows in a row. And it was like, okay, that was very challenging, but I pulled it off.
Because I don't think people realize this. Most bands at LA Guns level and from that era do what's called fly dates, where you go in and you play a Friday, Saturday, you use gear and you fly home. Yeah, you're not on the vehicle, you're not playing 5, 6 days a week. You do a couple shows on the weekend, you go home. So to actually, and I know Tom likes to tour, like he likes to go out in a bus, and he's doing it again. And I know you're on some of the dates, but
we are.
He likes to go out like that, which is rare because most bands, to save money or whatever, go ahead and do the weekend stuff.
Yeah.
So stamina-wise, especially on you as a singer, that you know, you've got to ramp up to that, I would think.
It was good. It was a challenge, and my band was supportive, and we were enjoying ourselves. We were, as I said, writing and recording, and it was a real band of brothers, and being together after all this, like that 2 years of isolation from the pandemic. It was great.
Yeah. I want to go back to the beginning though for a second when we were talking about Girl. For people that don't know that band, again, there were two records and the records were released on Jet Records, correct?
Yeah.
Jet was owned by Don Arden, correct? Don Arden, the father of Sharon Osbourne.
Who married Ozzy.
Right. And Don Arden was known as a very larger-than-life, intimidating figure.
He certainly was.
In the music industry. I was curious your experiences with him being on his label back then.
Oh, he cracked me up. He was such a gangster. He was just a real 60s character. You know, he didn't bullshit. You know, he goes, I'll make you famous. I'll do what wherever you want to go, but it'll cost you. And you know, it was like, it really was signing a deal with the devil.
Oh, is that right?
But you know, we put this band together, and we were kind of surprised that people were coming to our shows and people were interested. And it was like, he wants to give us a record deal. Oh, yeah, all right. Okay, why not? So we took it. And it was a terrible deal, but we didn't care. We were in our 20s and, you know, like the percentages were ridiculous. We never made a dime. But I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
When you say he said, I'll make you famous, he didn't with Girl. Girl didn't get there.
Yeah, we did fall out a bit, see.
You fell out with him or amongst yourselves?
No, well, I mean, certainly it started with him. He was doing really silly. You know, we had our own style and he was bringing in outside writers, Rod Arden and people that weren't really, Russ Ballard, people that weren't really on our wavelength. We were, you know, like we wanted to do like Teenage Kicks and they're trying to do this other thing. So we kind of fell out. And then he put us on the Kiss tour, the English Kiss tour. And that went disastrously. So
why so?
They weren't very nice to us. And you know, we were just trying to put on a show. And we didn't have anyone from the label. We're playing fucking Wembley. And we'd got nobody from Jet. No manager. We're just a bunch of fucking orphans running around, and not so much Kiss the band, but the crew were utter cunts. I mean, they were just going out of their way to make it as difficult for us as possible. And we had two shows in a row back to back, and the second one, I just couldn't face it. I couldn't go. I didn't show up.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So did the band play without you?
No.
Oh, so they just didn't.
Yeah.
Because you were so pissed off at how you were being treated.
Yeah, and the fact that we had no label down there, and I just couldn't bear another night of the way the Kiss crew were going to treat us.
Wow. So the second Girl record was Sheer Greed, right?
Yeah. Sheer Greed was the first.
Okay. The second was Wasted Youth.
Yeah.
So after that record comes out, and Phil gets the offer to join Def Leppard and goes and does Pyromania.
Yeah.
So does the band immediately break up at that point?
No, not at all. In fact, Phil had been, Iron Maiden had been after Phil. They asked
him to join Maiden.
Yeah. They asked him a couple of times, and he was like, "No, I want to stick with this. I want to, you know, see it through, see where it goes, see if Don's going to send us over to America and do the tour with Ozzy." Because that was the carrot. It was like, you guys are going to take you over. And in the end, we pissed him off so much, he sent Magnum. Phil had been sitting on the fence with this Maiden offer for about 6 months. And I'm like, you should do it, man. He's like, really? And then when the Def Leppard thing came, it was like, wow, yeah, absolutely do it. Because, you know, that we were in London at the time when that Pyromania was being recorded. And, you know, musicians, we were hearing what were the rough demos and what was coming out, and just the gossip about this fucking incredible record. And he had a chance to be on it.
Right.
And we were absolutely 100% our blessing. So we stumbled on for another year or so. We had a couple of we were pretty big in Japan, so we went and wrapped it up over there. But yeah, it was pretty much over. And you know, it was like I remember I'd be sitting at home, and Phil would call me from the States, and he'd be telling me about the business they were doing in the early days, and it was just so phenomenal, the money they were making at merch. And I'm sitting in London, it's cold and I'm broke. And I'm like, please, stop calling me.
Don't torment me.
Stop doing it. Yeah. We made 100 grand in merch last night.
Well, you know, Joe Elliott told me something crazy about that period, which I never realized, is that Pyromania was a huge record here in America.
Yeah.
10 million copies, MTV every minute, they're playing arenas. Yeah. But Leppard didn't break in the UK until the next record on Hysteria.
Yeah.
Joe told me that he used to go back to England, coming here in America, big rock stars, they go back to England, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and it really wasn't until that next record. Yeah,
yeah, for a while they hit the jackpot over here real quick, and it took a little longer over there because England was so fucked. It was just so anti-rock and roll. I was in this band Aftergirl with Bernie Torme, you can explain who Bernie is.
Well, yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because I actually got an email from one of my listeners when I told them you were going to be on.
Yeah.
And they asked me to kind of go back into your story a little bit because they were curious about your work with Bernie Torme, which I didn't realize you worked with him.
Yeah, it was great. Girl are over, and I was like sitting on my couch, it's raining out. I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do? And out of the blue, Bernie called me. And he goes, I'm putting this band together. And he normally did the singing, but he goes, do you fancy having a go, you know, being a front man? And I was like, let me see what you got. He sent me over some music. It was fantastic. The shows were fantastic. The band was great.
So you did live shows with them?
Oh, we did tons of live shows.
And you did a record with them?
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, we did a record called Back to Babylon. It's just fantastic. John McCoy produced it, who was the bass player in Ian Gillan's band. And Gillan. And Bernie and John McCoy had worked in Gillan together.
Mm-hmm.
So John produced the record. Yeah, we were doing shows. We were selling out clubs. We were selling out small theaters. We were making a splash. We were getting great reviews in the music press. We could not get arrested. It was like I believe, honestly, I believe that even Guns N' Roses wouldn't have got a record deal in London at that time in like 84, 85. It was all Boy George. It was all Duran Duran. It was all fucking Live Aid shit. Mm-hmm. And if you're a rock and roll band, forget it. It was the end of Lizzie.
Right.
All these bands, these fantastic bands were just going down because of this fucking twee fucking bullshit.
Right.
And the only way I could get, if I wanted to carry on being a rock singer, being in a band, I had to go to America. I had to go to the States.
Yeah. I wanted to ask before we move to that, when you were, for people that, Bernie Torme, not well known in America, but he is known in, for one thing, in that he was the guy that initially did a few shows in Ozzy after Randy died.
Yeah.
And for the most part, they were quite disastrous.
Well, yeah.
Because not that he's not a great player, but he wasn't the right player.
Right.
And thrown in very quickly.
Yeah.
When you were working with him, was it around that time? Had he done it already?
Yeah, he'd done it already. And he told me some great stories. He said that the first night that he went out,
I think it was Madison Square Garden.
I believe so.
Yeah.
And he said the pedals were changing themselves.
What does that mean?
The effects pedals. They were changing. He wasn't touching.
Oh, so them. Somebody, they were clicking.
They were clicking.
Wow.
Just like, and yeah. He wouldn't make something like that up. Like the phaser would come on where it was supposed to. Stuff like, he told me that. It's like, whoa.
Wow.
No, the thing about Bernie, but see, Randy was, I met Randy. I met all those guys.
Oh, you did?
They were on Jet Records. And when they were recording Ozzy's album, they were all in London. So I became
friends. Ozzy was signed to Jet in the UK.
Yeah, yeah. So I was hanging out with Randy. I was hanging out with Rudy Zarzo, hanging out with Ozzy. Like
you were label mates.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember meeting Randy Rose in the Marquee. And he goes, "Hi, I'm Randy." I said, "Look, you shouldn't really say that in London." The English Randy means horny.
Are you Randy? Oh, is that right?
Austin Powers.
Yeah, like, okay,
right?
Now I got you.
Are you Randy? So he got a big laugh out of that. Randy was a meticulous, classically trained guitarist. Bernie was a gin-soaked bottleneck, slide blues guitarist. They couldn't be more different,
right?
But Bernie, you know, he rose up to it. He took it on. But yeah, now they're just completely different styles.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Bernie gets killed for that, but it really wasn't his fault. He was thrown into that and didn't have time to sort all that out. And then Brad Gillis ended up coming in for a bit, and then Jake and they
needed
somebody.
Bernie, by his own admission, wasn't extraordinarily dexterous. He wouldn't do these like insane runs. It was tasty. It was quick, but he was much more of a feel, much more of a slide, as opposed to like a spectacular guitar player.
Right, right. Were you offered gigs with other bands that we don't know about before LA Guns or during LA Guns? Has anybody tried to poach you for, you mentioned that Iron Maiden was after Phil Collin. Was there any offers that came your way prior to LA Guns?
There was stuff, but like Glenn Matlock, the bass player from the Sex Pistols, wanted me to do a project with Calvin Most, who was Mickey Most's son. Mickey Most was Kim Wilde's dad, manager. But they wanted me to get a fucking haircut. They wanted me to put on a suit and some fucking Doc Martin boots.
Spandau Ballet?
That was it. You know, the band was called Hot Club or something ridiculous like that. We did a bit of recording. It wasn't really my thing. And they were like, "Well, Phil, you know, it's, you know, you look good, you sound good, but, you know, it's the image, mate." And I was like, "Gotta go."
Yeah, deal breaker.
Gotta go.
Yeah, yeah.
I can bear it.
Yeah. How do you, I know you told the story before, but how does a guy at this point in his life in England, in London, knocking around. Okay, you've had a signed band, two records didn't happen. You did this stuff with Bernie Torme.
Yeah.
This little thing you just told us about. Where does Tracy Guns come on your radar?
Oh my God! Yeah. Well, see, I'm right there. And my life's over. I'm like, this is it. I'm done.
You're ready to go try to play soccer.
Well, yeah, get back to playing soccer. You know, my 20s. I burnt out during my 20s. I've pissed everyone off. I'm not. There's no rock scene. I know what I'm gonna do, and that's when I got a call from a guy called Alan Jones, who was Tracy's manager, LA Guns' manager. Alan's a fascinating character. He was the saxophone player from the 60s band Amen Corner. And he'd come out to LA in the 80s, early 80s, and he'd opened up a bunch of boutiques on Melrose Avenue. In fact, he was one of the architects of that whole Melrose Avenue scene.
Mm.
Not much of a scene now, but for a time.
Right.
And when I first moved out, it was like the center of the universe.
Yeah.
And he was king of it. And the band were working at his store, but they were useless because they were always like busy on the phone booking gigs and not very good salesmen or particularly nice people to customers.
Right.
So Alan said, "No, you're fired." And he fired Mick Cripps, fired him, said, and then Mick's like, "Well, okay, you can fire us, but would you consider being our manager?" And he was like, "Oh," and Alan liked a challenge. And he did. And I'd met Alan in the summer, and he said he was managing this band in LA, and LA was the place to be. There was this band called Guns N' Roses that were just about to blow up. There was this band Faster Pussycat. It was a really happening scene. I said, "Wow, Alan, that sounds great. I'd love to." And I didn't hear from him for like 6 months. And then I got a call from Alan again. He goes, "You know, I was talking to you about that band." I was like, "Yeah, yeah." He goes, "You wouldn't be interested in coming out and trying out and doing some singing for him." And I was like, "Really? You want me to come out?" And I said, "Well," I said, how, he goes, "How soon can you come out?" I said, "Well, how about tomorrow?" So
I did. You really go the next day?
Well, not quite the next day. I went certainly that week.
And had you ever been to LA before?
No. Oh, yeah, I've been to LA as a guest of people, but I never like my own place and
right.
like, immersed in it in a band.
Because did girl ever tour the States?
No, that's because we pissed off Don. He was like, "That's it, no Aussie tour for you. We're giving it to Magnum."
Right, that's right, the Aussie tour. Yeah,
yeah.
One last question on Girl. I just always wanted to ask this. So you on one of the records you cover the Kiss song "Do You Love Me?"
Yeah.
How did that come about? Whose idea was
Kim Fowley's?
Kim Fowley, who co-wrote the song,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah, we were up in Jet. Jet had a publishing, Aviation Music, at the top of their offices. And Kim Fowley had seen Girl. He'd heard about it. And he was curious because, you know, it was a kind of thing that he would be into. So he called up and he was like, "You know, you guys have got, you know, your songs are all right, but this is the song. Do this song and it's going to complete it. It'll break the band. It'll open doors, guaranteed." And yeah, we heard it. It was all right. Yeah, it's okay. It was better than the Russ Ballard stuff that Don was making us listening to.
Right. So it wasn't because anybody in the band was a big Kiss fan or anything.
No.
It was a song that was brought to you.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about this, and I don't know if you know it, but the band The Struts, the British band The Struts, now current band.
Yeah.
They covered "Do You Love Me" on their last record.
Oh, right.
And I talked to Luke, their singer.
Yeah.
And I said, "Wow, you covered a Kiss song on the record." And he goes, "No, we covered a Girl song." I swear to God. He said, "We don't know that." He said, "All these people were coming up to
that's
us."
Fantastic.
Because Luke's a younger guy.
Yeah.
And he said, "All these people would come up to us and be like, 'Hey, man, you covered Kiss.'" And we're like, "We didn't even know Kiss did that song."
Yes,
they
awesome.
Knew
that
your
makes,
version.
That makes my day, Eddie.
Yeah.
So I get summoned to the dressing room at Wembley, and it's Gene.
This is when you're touring with Kiss.
Yeah. And so he's looking at me through the mirror. He's not looking at me directly. He's looking at me through the mirror. And I'm getting the third degree. So Philip, you, our songs are like our children. You know, we're not very happy with you playing our song live.
You were playing "Do You Love Me" live, but opening for them?
Yes. We only knew 9 songs. We did, and I said to Gene. I said, Gene, we don't know more than we don't know a dozen songs. We don't. This is it. This is all we got. And you know that I was really disappointed, right? Because it wasn't in their set,
right?
And we sort of made it ours, and I was really disappointed that he would bring me in and give me the headmaster trip, saying don't play our song. So that was another one of the reasons why it soured me, and I didn't show up for that gig.
Yeah, wow. Hey, I love talking about all this old stuff, but before you know it, we're going to be out of time. We got about 15 minutes or so here. So let's get into LA Guns and let's get into this album.
Yeah.
So, and just in general, where we're at now, because you've done a fair amount of touring. You did the stuff with Kiefer. You got more stuff with Kiefer coming up. Bring us up to speed about what's going on with the band now, leading into the record, touring, you know, what the plan is.
All right. Now, the summer was a good summer. We got a lot done. We got a lot accomplished. It had problems. We had some personal issues.
This past summer.
Yeah.
With the band.
Yeah. Yeah.
Internal issues?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, Tracy was going through a really, really difficult time.
Well, we know that about, you know, when he played in the bathroom and all that sort of stuff, that was very public.
Yeah, and he was really going through a hard time, and it was my job as his oldest and best friend to be his cheerleader to get him through this. And there were some nights were really, you know, he played the show in the toilet, and it wasn't because it was too hot. He had nothing to do with it. We've played hotter shows before, played brighter shows before. He was just he was so beat down. It's really difficult as a performer to go out and give it 100% when you've just had your heart ripped out. And it was on a daily basis. He was going through this breakup, and some days were good, and some days were not so good. So that made things difficult for our current, our then management, because Tracy was a little unhinged. He was a little off the rails, and Scotty, our original man, when I first joined the band, agreed to do the reunion, Scotty Ludwig was a big part of the organization.
I love Scotty. He's a good friend.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
I love him too. Now, Scotty and Tracy had a prior relationship. They've been working together for 2 or 3 years before the reunion. So they've got a kind of relationship that you and I will never understand. It's like a marriage. And that wasn't going terribly well either.
Mm.
And just around the summer, not the summer, the holidays, we were supposed to play 2 shows at Vamped, and
here in Vegas.
Yeah, 2 days before, Tracy and Scott had a real blowout argument, and Scotty quit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd always said from the day I joined the reunion, I said, "Don't quit," to Scotty. I said, "If you leave, I'm leaving," and I did. I did for like a minute. I left. I was like, I can't be in this band with Tracy the way he is at the moment, because he's just so unraveled. And I didn't know what I was going to do. But we had these shows, these 2 shows at Vamped. And Scotty had quit. And Tracy, he doesn't have a credit card. It was like, how are you going to get the band out to Vamped, how are we going to do that? We were so dependent on Scotty, not just as management, but more like big brother, really. Mm. I mean, you know, like sorting out everything, logistics, and all of a sudden that was gone.
Right.
So my challenge to Tracy was, I said, if you can get to Vegas if you can get the band to Vegas, I'll do the shows.
Because you had actually, left the band. That never publicly got out there, but you actually, for a brief time, had left.
I mean, once I heard he was leaving, I was like,
the manager, Scott, yeah.
I can't do it. I cannot do it. But they managed to work their way out to Vegas, and I did the gig, and it was amazing. It was a great, great show, and we did the second show the following night. And then I just came to the conclusion that as much as I miss Scotty and how important he is, it's the nucleus. It's me and Tracy. And if we can continue to do these great shows and make these great albums, then we shouldn't stop. And you know, he's turned, I'm so happy to see him happy now.
He's dating Orianti now.
He's very public about everything.
well, I'm just saying I would never say things that aren't public knowledge.
Yeah.
I'm very careful about that.
I was telling him in the summer, I said, you know, in the deepest depths of despair, I said, Tracy, in 6 months' time, we're going to be laughing. We're going to be okay. You're going to get through this. And sure enough.
Yeah.
He's gotten through it, and I'm happy for him. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And that's very much the case with this over the holidays. If the band hadn't made it to Vegas, if they hadn't shown up.
That could have been it.
That could have been it. Because it's like, well, if they can't get it together to get a fucking van out to Vegas, then we don't really have anything.
Right.
But they did. Right. And it was a good show. And we were very emotional. It was really emotional, and we just lent deeply into the music, and it got us through.
How much longer do you see yourself doing LA Guns? You said you almost quit you did quit actually for a few days recently, but at this point in your life, after dedicating better than 40 years of your life to the music industry, how much longer do you see yourself wanting to do this? And if you weren't doing this, and if you weren't fronting a band, what would you want to do? Is there anything left you'd want to do, or would you just kind of go away quietly and retire?
No, I'm far from done. I look at people like Rob Halford. I look at Ozzy. These people, you know, like in.
But if you would have left LA Guns a couple months ago when you did and didn't come back, what would you have done?
I would have picked up an acoustic and gone out. I would have
done your own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have done my own shows, and then I would have put a band together.
Right. And then just done it under your name or something along those lines.
Yeah.
When people forget you weren't in LA Guns for a while yourself. And I remember when you weren't doing it, correct me if I'm wrong, because I remember talking to you around that time. Weren't you working in editing sports or something, sports clips?
That's
Didn't you get
right.
into a
very
TV
long,
gig?
A very long time ago, in 1998, 99, it was just the bubble had burst.
Yeah.
They've seen.
Right.
And we all had to get job jobs.
Sure.
We all had, you know, responsibilities. I had a daughter I had to raise. My studio experience qualified me, and I knew a bit about this new system of recording called Pro Tools, which everyone knows now. It's ancient history, but I knew it at the early stages. And I got a gig at Fox, and you know, it was a neat place. You know, I'm not into sports. It's a very corporate thing, but a lot of ex-musicians work there. Greg Steele worked there.
From Faster Pussycat?
Yes! I ran into him. He was one of the engineers there. So it had a good vibe.
You enjoyed it, or?
Or
was it a job?
I didn't mind the work. I didn't mind, and I certainly liked the people I was working with. I could not bear the 9 to 5.
Right.
I couldn't bear that, like the Monday to Friday. You know, Friday was only 48 hours to Monday. And that was my only free time. And that's what killed me. And then, you know, I did that for a few years. And then in 2000, year 2000, was when Brian Pereira offered Mick Cripps a decent amount of dough to reform. So it was worth my while to do it. And I was like, well, once again, when I first joined LA Guns, it might be 2 weeks, it might be 2 months. It was the same thing with leaving Fox and going back to the band. I didn't know how long I was going. And that was obviously 23 years ago.
Of all the people that have been in and out of LA Guns, yourself included, of course, you were in and out.
Yeah.
But of all the people, you, for the most part, you've been pretty much a constant outside of the time you weren't there. And clearly the guy as far as the singer in the band. But of all the people you've worked with in the group, do you maintain relationships with some of these people or no? Not
almost
really.
All of them.
Is that right?
Kelly, Adam Hamilton. Yeah.
Stacey Blades lives here.
Yeah, Stacey as well. Yeah, I really enjoyed working with them, and it doesn't always work out. And sometimes people go the different ways, and sometimes it's just there's just nothing happening, you know. But yeah, I mean, with a handful of exceptions, I like to consider myself on a friendly basis with everyone, every ex member.
Yeah. Going forward now for this year, these dates, you have some dates again with Kiefer. I know Winger's on a bunch of the tour.
Yeah.
Initial run.
Okay, so as I was saying, so this is going back to the Scotty thing. Kiefer's people picked us up. We got...
Tim.
Yeah, we got Kiefer's agent, Jim Lenz, picked us up. And then we got the people, the good people over at UAG Management.
Right. Tim and Brian.
Brian and Tim.
Yeah. Also good people.
So we have a new infrastructure. And it's... being put together, stuff is being put together, and it takes a while. Plus, because I wouldn't want to just go straight on that West Coast Kiefer tour, because we've got an album coming out, and we really should be concentrating on that. We should come focusing on ourselves, getting the relationship, working out this new management agent we have with a new record. And doing it by ourselves as opposed to being on any kind of a line. I wouldn't want to go out for 6 weeks like we did last year.
Mm.
I don't think we're in a position to do that. But yeah, I mean, I love those shows with Kiefer were all so much fun. They're all really good guys.
Yeah.
Really friendly, and we all get on really well.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, you guys are running into a really good problem to have, because with the new record, Black Diamonds, which again is coming out next month,
yes.
Right? So with that, and then, of course, the recent records you made that we touched on, Missing Piece, Checkered Past, and then, of course, the catalog, you've got Everybody Wants to Hear, whether it's Sex Action,
yeah,
or Never Enough, or Ballad of Jane. So honing in on representing the new stuff and getting all the old 80s stuff in on a set list these days, pretty difficult.
Very difficult. Incredibly difficult.
Especially because you guys are usually playing an hour.
Songs. You'll get two or three new songs per set. But yeah, they want the nugget. We can't do a show and not play Sex Action or Ballad of Jane.
Right.
You know, they'd be uproar.
Right.
So we have to mix it up. And like the last album, Cannonball, worked well. Whether you know the song or not.
You open with it, didn't you?
Yeah.
You came out in a pirate outfit.
That's how ballsy we are. No one's ever heard this song before. We're going to come out and open with it, because that's how strongly we feel about it. And it's a fucking good song.
Speed, you did too.
Speed too. That's another one. Yeah. So always pick one or two out.
Right.
The Flood, we did the record before, and then Let You Down from the last record. But the last record was crazy because it was all recorded at home and we didn't really promote it. Yeah, that's a real challenge, especially when you got this new ballad that we're working, the next one that's coming out, Diamond, which is such a beautiful, amazing, this is the best ballad you've heard in decades. It's 7 minutes long. I don't know how we're going to put that in a set, in a 45 minute set, but somehow we do.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, sounds like going forward, it's a bit of a transitional time again for
big
the band
time.
In terms of infrastructure,
right?
In terms of feeling this out again.
Yeah.
Record coming next month, some shows announced. But correct me if I'm wrong, it feels like you're going to kind of tread lightly here and kind of like, you know, just navigate everything and try to ramp
Very
back
much.
Up again.
You know, the last 5 years have been a blur. This reunion has been amazing. We've been around the world. We've made great music. We've done great shows. And a little bit of a breather while we do make these changes isn't a bad thing. Mm. And just, you know, like, we're not, as you said, we're not a Weekend Warrior band. We were. I was big time into that, leaving on Friday, playing Saturday, Sunday, coming back Monday. We're really a bit more organic than that. So I do kind of want to set us apart from that genre, the usual suspects.
Mm-hmm.
You know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Play every weekend at casinos and.
Sure.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to do anything musically that you haven't done yet? You've never done a solo record, I don't think, have you?
I did a solo record right before I joined Fox. It wasn't very good. It was a home studio recorded with ADATS. It's called More Purple Than Black. It must have come out around like 94, 95. I think it's on Cleopatra.
Mm.
It's okay. I wouldn't mind doing another one.
That's what I was asking, because Tracy does a lot of stuff outside of the band too. He does a lot of
different
things.
No, I think it's about time I did another one, and I've certainly got the time and now I've got the ability, the recording chops to do it. There's no reason why I shouldn't.
Yeah.
But I'm just having so much fun, and as you say, so prolific. I don't get a lot of time.
Right. Yeah, by the time we're done with this interview, he's going to be sending you five more songs. Let's go for the next record.
Because
that's what happened with the last one. He sent me this one, Black Diamonds, and the last one had just come out. And he goes, this is the next LA Guns record. He said, whoa, I'm just talking about, but he's just kept.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm so glad that you have that. You and him have that friendship, and he lays stuff on you to see what you think. You know,
because
we value your opinion a lot, because you know what you're talking about.
Well, I appreciate that. That music means we got to wrap up.
Right.
Everybody,
pleasure,
check
Eddie.
Out.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you for coming out. We'll have to do it again.
Yep.
Black Diamonds, the new album from LA Guns, is out April. Did you say 12th? The exact date? The 12th of April. You can do the pre-order for it now and all of that. And keep an eye on the band's outlets and socials and what have you to find out where the dates are. There are dates. There are some dates as well on the next run of the Kiefer tour. So keep an eye on the band. And there's two songs and videos out now from the new record check out, with another one coming, as you mentioned.
Fantastic.
So.
Thank you. That sums it up nicely.
Well, my thanks to Phil Lewis. A lot of people enjoyed that interview. As a matter of fact, Tommy Shaw from Styx was listening to the show when I did that interview live, and he enjoyed it so much that he later called in and joined me on the radio. It was cool to have Phil sitting in with me there in Vegas. Check out the new LA Guns album, which is out there right now, again, called Black Diamonds.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Save big money on everything now at Menards. Make quick work of your outdoor cleaning project with Masterforce outdoor and landscaping tools. The 80-volt cordless trimmer is powerful, efficient, and hassle-free, so you spend less time working on your yard and more time enjoying the results. On sale now through May 19th. Check out our wide selection of Masterforce tools and see the rest of our deals on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Meet the next generation of podcast stars with SiriusXM's Listen Next program, presented by State Farm. As part of their mission to help voices be heard, State Farm teamed up with SiriusXM to uplift diverse and emerging creators. Tune in to Stars and Stars with Issa, as host Issa Nakazawa dives into birth charts of her celeb guests. This is just the start of a new wave of podcasting. Visit statefarm.com to find out how we can help prepare for your future. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
As I mentioned, second interview for you this week on the podcast. It is with Joel Hoekstra, best known for Whitesnake and Trans-Siberian Orchestra, Jeff Pilson, best known for Dokken and Foreigner, and Dean Castronovo, best known as the drummer and vocalist in Journey. Together, they are the new lineup of a band called Revolution Saints, just released a brand new record. Here they are to tell us about it. All right, we are back and we're live on this Tuesday, and I got three guys here that you all know from various different bands, and they're joining us on Zoom, so we got some video on this as well. We'll get it up on the SiriusXM app so you can watch it on demand whenever you want. I'm going to start in the Hollywood in Hollywood Squares in square number one. We'll start with a guy that you best know from Dokken and Foreigner, and he's been on this show many times with various projects in the past. Our good buddy Jeff Pilson is on. What's up, Jeff?
Hey there. Hey there. Good to be here, Eddie. And hello, Bob Dixon, who I know is listening.
And are you in your home studio there, Jeff? Is that where you are? You
I
got
am.
A great little... Yeah, you look like you're always, you got a lot of... A lot of music being made behind you somehow.
Oh yeah, I got a lot of toys here. A very wonderful selection of toys.
And you've produced a lot of records for other artists. Are you producing anyone right now in that studio?
Well, yeah, I've been George Lynch and I have been writing another End Machine record. So he was here yesterday. So we're doing that. I do the Revolution Saints bass tracks here, but you know, not everything else.
Right. Yeah. I just saw George in Florida a week or two ago. He was trying to remember who was in his own band at the time, believe it or not.
And I bet he didn't.
That happened.
He didn't know the name of his bass player. It was classic. He was on the air and saying, I don't know. I got to find out. I got to go out and find him. But he's, I swear to God, he's too much, that guy. He's still awesome though. So anyway, he did tell me new stuff was coming. You were doing more End Machine. So looking forward to that.
It's going to be pretty monstrous, I got to say.
Very, very cool. So, all right. So I want to get a little something from all of you guys about the other stuff you do. But we're going to talk, of course, about Revolution Saints, which you're all in together. As I move down to the next square, I have joining us current drummer and at times lead singer in Journey, Dean Castronovo. Good to see you, Dean.
Good to see you. I'm Dean Castronovo. I'm from Salem, Oregon. I'm a homemaker. I love knitting and crocheting.
You're not in the center square. I saw you not long ago with Journey. I guess it was last year in Vegas on the run there. We had a chance to say a quick hello, and you've been on the show in the past, and I know Journey just started up, and needless to say, some very public drama surrounding the band these days that they are very open about. How's it been on the road, Dean? Are you just keeping your head low and playing those drums? What are you doing?
Switzerland, brother. Switzerland. I love those guys. They're both my brothers, man. And I stay out of it, man. I mean, I'm here to do a job and be the best I can be. And they know I love them and I support them no matter what they do. But yeah, for me, the whole drama thing, I just stay out, man. I got work to do.
And you do it well. How have these early shows gone? How's the vibe been? How's the audience been with Journey?
It's great, dude. Honestly, on stage, I mean, everything is perfect. I mean, everybody kind of goes to their separate corners, which is cool, but it's been really good, man. You know, I mean, we did two shows in Oklahoma, came home, sang the new Revolution Saints record, the second one, and then flew out the next day and had one day off. So I sang like 9 days straight. So I'm a little fried, but the band, the spirits are great. Everybody's up and happy, and we were having a good time, and we're, you know, whittling out old stuff and new stuff, trying some new songs, and it's going good so far, man. Really good. But we just started, so you never know.
Lot to go. 50th anniversary tour. Anything can happen. So we'll buckle up and see and hope for the best.
That's it, brother. That's it.
And next square we go to a guy who's like the king of Christmas now. He just got done with TSO. Playing like three shows a day, probably in 3 weeks or something. But of course, you also know him as the guitarist in Whitesnake, previous in Night Ranger, an old friend, Mr. Joel Hoekstra. Good to see you, bud.
Hey, great to see you, man. Thanks for having us on, dude. Appreciate it.
For sure. How'd everything go with this TSO run?
Really, really well. I mean, the numbers were fantastic. You know, the Billboard headlines and all that. It's always one of the top you know, grossing tours. It's, you know, it's remarkable as the years go by how the perception of that changes. You know, a lot of the classic rock bands going into decline or retiring, and TSO just kind of keeps on moving up. So, you know, I mean, you can't ask for much more than jam with people I enjoy. I like all the people in that band. It's a magnificent production. There's a lot of talent in that group of musicians. I mean, so getting together for rehearsals is kind of magical when, you know, you're sitting there with Dino Jalusic and Jeff Scott Soto and Russell Allen. And I mean, you got, there's a lot of monstrously talented people that I'm involved with that. So, you know, I'm honored to be a small part of it, man.
And of course, you know, you did what was going to be a farewell run with Whitesnake in Europe, and that kind of got derailed. I know some people got sick and the whole thing kind of went off the rails a little bit. Has David said to you and the rest of the band, if there's a, I know you wanted to do a farewell, but is it kind of tabled? Do you think Whitesnake's done, or you think he wants to go back out? Do you have any insights on that?
Well, I mean, you know, with David, you never rule anything out. And obviously any news has got to come from him. And, you know, one way or another, I look forward to continuing working with David, whether that be recording or heading out live. And, you know, I guess any official announcement will obviously have to come from him, what he decides. But, you know, I love David. This has been, you know, an amazing, amazing run. If it is the end, you know, the 8 years that I've been with the band, over 8 years now. So, you know, I love David. We have a great working relationship, and just, you know, anything he wants to involve me in, man, I'm down, you know, just because we've just, since day one, when I got together with him, we just hit it off. And I just, you know, anything David wants, like as far as, you know, guitar or any musical collaboration, I'm there.
Well, hopefully it doesn't end like this, because I know it was unfortunate. Some of you guys got sick and all that in Europe, and he came home, and hopefully you can at least do a proper farewell, because a band with that legacy shouldn't end on that note, I don't think, at least.
I mean, you know, our fingers are like crazy glued like this, I think. So, you know, we'll see what happens, dude.
Yeah. All right, Dean. So let me ask you this about Revolution Saints. So you've been on my show before with the previous lineup of the band, which was Doug Aldridge and Jack Blades. And then you come with this new record called Eagle Flight, which is coming out on April 21st. And now you got these two guys in the band, and those two are not. So tell me how, you know, tell me what went on and what went down.
Well, I think what happened was, Doug and Jack just decided, I mean, it was time to put a fork in it, kind of. You know, we kind of done what we could do with it. And, you know, they've got their other things. You know, Jack's got Night Ranger, of course, that's his baby. And Doug's got the Dead Daisies. You know how those guys work, bro. You know how those guys work. They're nonstop. So to get the time in for everybody, I think, was just really difficult, and getting schedules to line up. And I think Jack was ready to move on, and Jack was ready, you know, to just focus on family. He's got grandkids and stuff, and do a Night Ranger. So it was like, okay, what are we going to do here? Are we gonna, you know, shelve this thing, or are we going to move on? Are we going to do, like, you know, a solo record with me or what? And Cheryl Fino said, well, what about Joel? And what about Jeff Bilson? I mean, you know, that's a no-brainer. They're amazing, amazing players. So it was like, well, what a fit, dude, you know, and the chemistry's great. And, you know, I miss Doug and Jack. Of course I do. They're my brothers, man. I mean, I love them, you know, to the moon and back. You know, things change, life on life terms, you know, so you move forward. And I think we got a really strong record, really strong record. And I love the guys, man. When we got in to do the videos, because, you know, we do all the recording. I did my stuff in Portland. You know, Jeff was saying he does his stuff at home, or and Joel's got his stuff. So for us to come together, like doing the videos, it was really cool. Jeff and I were limping around like gimps. It was awesome. I was having some back issues. Finally got that taken care of again for the second time. But we were like looking bad and killing it, and then get down, ice, sit down, relax. It was awesome. The chemistry's there, though. It's really, really great.
When you say Serafino, for those listening, Serafino is the person who owns the label you're on, which is Frontiers. They put out a ton of records, and records from all the guys in the band at different points as well. So this band, Dean, the history of Revolution Saints was really something that was his brainchild. Did he assemble the initial lineup with you, Doug, and Jack? Was it something that was his idea, or was the band your idea and you brought it to the label?
That was his baby. He actually got a hold of Irving Azoff and John Barry, said, I want to do a solo record with Dean. And so, man, that would be awesome. I was really excited. And then so they threw out some names. And of course, Doug was a no-brainer. I love Doug. You know, we go back from the White Snake, you know, Journey shows. And Jack, I've known since I was like 17. I've known him for eons. So it was like, oh, this is going to be perfect. Because, you know, I got history with these guys. So instead of a solo project, Jack thought of the name. He goes, well, I like the name Revolution. They were going to call it something else like, oh gosh, I don't know. It was something Drome, Hippodrome or something Drome, or I don't know what it was, but it was like, yeah, no. So Jack came up with Revolution Saints. Like, oh, what a great name. What a killer name. So it became a band. And we started, you know, doing the records. Of course, we've done three with them. And they came out really good. First one was really strong. Second one was pretty good. Third one was real strong. But, you know, it's, I think it just kind of came to that place where it's like, it was time to let go. But yeah, Serafino, this is his baby, man. I mean, he kind of runs it. And I just do what I'm told.
Jeff, when you were approached about jumping in Jack's slot, I mean, of course, you sing as well as play bass. What were your thoughts about getting involved in this?
My thoughts were, it took all of about a nanosecond to agree to do it because I knew it was going to be great. I mean, I heard Joel's and Dean's names and, you know, come on, nothing more to think of. I mean, I just knew it was going to be great. And I was familiar with what they did. I knew the vibe of what they were going for. And I thought I could be good for it. So just like Dean says, it was a no-brainer.
You're perfect for it, Joel.
And what about for you, Joel, your thoughts about first being approached? I mean, you've done solo records as well for Frontiers, actually. And you've, of course, Whitesnake, which was at times on that label. But your thoughts about jumping in on a band called on Revolution Saints and jumping into that open guitar spot?
Yeah, I just, you know, out of respect, I wanted to make sure it was cool with Doug. And, you know, Doug and I have always gotten on. People might think you replace somebody in a band that you're enemies or something. But Doug and I have always been, you know, friends. And I just texted him and said, hey, what's up with this? You know, just making sure I'm getting the straight story on everything. Is this cool with you? And he said, actually, I recommended you. So I said, oh, all right. Well, that makes me feel a lot better about this, you know. And then as Jeff said, you know, in talking about an opportunity for me to work with Dean Castronovo and Jeff Pilson, then it's like, well, what sane guitarist says no to this, you know? So, look, as long as it was cool with Doug and, you know, Jack and I obviously have a great history. I sort of got the gist that everything was on the up and up after speaking with Doug. That was my main thing. I didn't want to have any kind of weird, you know, that he wasn't be given the straight story or I wasn't be given the straight story. That's all. And once I found out that we were cool there, I was like, absolutely, let's do it. This will be great. And, oddly enough, the three of us were on tour together in 2011. You know, we had a Journey Corner Night Ranger tour together. So.
Oh, yeah.
There was a time of, you know, not too long ago. Well, I guess it is too long ago now. Over 12 years ago, we were all out together roughly. And
in fact, you were even in Foreigner for a minute.
for a hot minute there. I was actually up on stage with you, Jeff. And you know, these two guys, we texted the other night, the three of us, and I said, you know, this is like, it's not just two guys with immense talent, because Dean is like, it's not fair, right? Like the first time I heard Dean sing, I said, well, this is just actually should be like illegal, you know, one of the best drummers in the world. And then you hear him sing and you go, and the guy's one of the best singers in the world, like stand alone, aside from the drumming, this is insane. And, you know, Jeff is like, you know, forget it. I mean, anybody who's anybody in the business understands the talent level that Jeff has. But, you know, these guys, they've known me since I didn't really, you know, I wasn't as established. We'll just put it that way back then. And, you know, these guys were both really, really great to me back then. And, this says a lot about their character. And that makes me want to work with them because, you know, they treated me like I was on their level when I clearly was not. And they continue to. I mean, I'm sitting here with them in the interview. And you know, I'm just glad to work with these guys, man. These are two great cats with like sick, sick talent. And, that for me is like, what more can you ask for as a guitarist? These are guys that are going to push me musically. Once again, it's, you know, Doug is always big shoes to fill, man. You know, like anytime you're coming in for Doug Aldrich, man, you better come with it, you know? So, it keeps me on my toes. And I look at it like it's a great musical situation to better myself and work with some top-notch guys who are great people.
Yeah, I didn't even put that together, but this is the second time you've done that because you went into Whitesnake for Doug, obviously. You replaced him there and now coming into to Revolution Saints, but it's cool that you guys talk and it's all good. Dean, I want to ask you material-wise for this. Having made the previous three records with the other lineup, the songs, was everybody able to contribute? Did everybody get involved in time? Did you build with the new lineup with Jeff and Joel? Did you start from the ground up on the songs, or were some of the songs already done and these guys just had to come in and play?
Well, if I'm saying this right, Joel and Jeff, if I'm wrong, let me know. But I think there was a lot of the songs that were kind of constructed. And I think you guys like embellished, put your stuff on it. Me, I don't write anything, dude. I don't play guitar. I don't write lyrics. So whatever's put in front of me, I just do my best and sing the best that I can. So for me writing, I don't write. I'm just not, you know. But did you guys, I mean, answer Joel, did you guys work on
the I mean, the funniest part about it was that Alessandro Del Vecchio, who produced the record, had come to me and said, you have any song ideas for Revolution Saints? And this is when it was Jack Blades and Doug Aldrich for this record. And so I said, yeah, sure, man. So I cooked up something that I thought Doug might enjoy playing. I sexy guitar riff with like kind of an open solo section. I thought it ended up being one of our singles on this record. It was like the strangest thing. I never thought I'd end up being like in the band doing it. I get a little bit of laugh out of that because I was writing it, picturing Doug doing it. Yeah.
That's wild. So you were actually approached to just bring in some songs from the outside, thinking of the old band lineup, having no idea you'd be the one playing them.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's strange how life works sometimes. Absolutely.
And Jeff, what about for you as far as contributing? I mean, producing, writing, any of that? Were you able to do that for this record?
No, not really. The songs were pretty much there by the time I got involved. Alessandro is the main writer for the whole thing. I pretty much just played bass. I mean, yeah, you add little things, but I wouldn't call it writing by any means. I'm hoping I get to write a couple for the next record maybe, but we'll see.
I think that's the plan though. I've done, the vocals for the second one, but I think you guys are going to be involved in the next one really heavily from what Alessandro said.
I think that's the goal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this too, Jeff and Joel. So both of your bands, Whitesnake, as we just kind of touched on, is a bit of a question mark pending what David wants to do. And for you, Jeff, I think what it's been 20 years as being the guy behind Foreigner and now press release coming out that the band will end in the next year or two. And you guys are going to do this farewell tour. I just had Paul Dean of Loverboy on the show. I know they're going to be supporting. We talked about it a little bit. So with both of your main things, either retiring or starting to wind down, was getting into Revolution Saints, maybe with an eye towards like somewhere you could maybe dedicate more time to in the future? Because I'll be honest, and Dean, you probably know this. I mean, one of the frustrations for fans of the band up to this point is that you haven't really been able to play live. You haven't really been able to tour because everybody's in a bunch of different directions. Well, right now you've got the same scenario, but the projections are in the next year or two, Joel and Jeff might, their main gigs might kind of be dissipating. So was that a consideration at all in terms of this next phase of the band? I'll start with you on that, Dean, as far as these guys coming in.
Yeah, for me, dude, yeah, because Journey, we do an average maybe 60 to 80 shows a year. And when we're done, I mean, we do a corporate here and some privates here and there, but I'm pretty much free now. With the Daisies, man, I was taken up. We were gone all year, so I couldn't do anything. But now that, I got the freedom with Journey, I've got their blessing to do stuff on the outside. And this, yeah, I would, God, I'd give my teeth to do some shows, man. I mean, I'm still learning the frontman thing. I don't know it, it's not my.
He's great.
It's my front. It's, I don't know, it's like Ricky Bobby.
You're great.
Like, what do I do with my hands? I've never actually got a text from Paul Stanley. I love him. And he goes, you're singing with a lot of power. You need a microphone stand and a mic. You need to wield that thing. And I'm like, he's right. You don't just stand.
But wait, Dean, are you not playing drums in Revolution Saints at all?
I'm playing drums on the record, and I will play live, definitely sometimes. But I'd like to think I'm out front, and if I don't make an ass out of myself, I mean,
and we got Kyle Hughes, man. Kyle's great. Kyle,
oh, so you've got a drummer. You've got another guy.
Yeah, so we got just in case, man. Yeah, I'd like to do some you know, some playing. But, you know, I mean, if the guys are cool with me going up front, I'll give it a shot, man. I did that one time at Frontiers Festival, and I was scared, beyond scared, because I you know, it's my very first time. So it was a little awkward for me, but, I'm willing to give it a shot. You know, what the heck? And if I look stupid, I got the drugs. So I'm good.
Well, anybody that's seen Journey lately, and I have, I mean, you take a couple songs lead vocal, and your voice is remarkable. And watching you back there playing and singing like that is incredible. And I often thought, I'm like, this guy could, you know, imagine what he could do if he comes out front and doesn't have to also worry about keeping the beat and singing like that. So,
yeah, dude, and it is, it's all about breathing, bro. You got to find the air when you're playing. And the drums take autopilot. They really do. It's like, I just know them. I know the song so well that that just takes a back seat. I got to breathe here to hit this note. I've got to take a breath here. I got to swallow my, you know, my water and my spray. And then, you know, it's a juggling act. So maybe to be out front, it might be a little better, but I'm not going to be, you know, Arnell's a god. You see that guy run around and he kills it every night. It's like, man, I don't think I'm going to be the David Lee Roth of this, but I will sing the best that I can. You know what I mean?
Arnell also has this amazing ability to be aging in reverse, it seems like. Every time I see him, he looks even younger. He's like, what is that guy, Benjamin Button or whatever? It's crazy. Yeah, it's like the opposite of Benjamin Button. When I saw him in Vegas, like last year, when I saw you I was backstage, and he came over and said hello, and he was wearing, I'll never forget it, he was wearing a hoodie that had a Mickey Mouse on it. And I was like, yes. You could believe this kid. He could actually be a kid in Disney World right now. That's how young he looks. It's amazing.
Dude, he does.
And he does sing remarkably well.
Yeah, man. He's amazing. I could never do what that guy does. I mean, not really anybody could, because not only does he put on a show, and he's so good with the fans. They adore him. And he delivers, man. He delivers.
Yeah, you know? No doubt. So, Jeff, for you, your thoughts about Foreigner, which you've put so much time and effort into. And, you know, I'm out of my mind about Foreigner not being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I've been screaming about it for a while. It's annoys the living shit out of me. I had Lou Gramm on my show. We got into it. Lou told me a story that it's actually intentional. There's like a vendetta or whatever. But you guys are still out there playing those songs so well and have been you've personally been a part of it for so long now. Your thoughts about Mick kind of putting a button on it and calling it a farewell?
Well, I mean, you know, bittersweet, of course, is my reaction. I mean, the band is playing and sounding great right now and feeling great. Even if that seems like a weird time to quit, I think the idea of quitting while we're still on top is kind of cool. And, you know, the traveling's getting to all of us. So this is year 20 for me coming up. So the traveling's been intense and kind of ready to let that go a bit. But yeah, it's bittersweet because the band is feeling great and you're sounding great. And we've only been doing this as far as how we're building. So, but I totally, totally understand and sanction the idea of letting it go and letting the live thing go. And I'm ready for it.
You know, I really was thought that Foreigner would be one of those bands that would actually just keep going on forever. And it's because the bulk of the shows you've played in recent years have not been with Mick or in a very small role. Mm-hmm. So you guys could conceivably do it. Obviously the fans accept it, but I'll never forget. I had Mick on this show about 5 years ago. And I remember asking him during that interview, and I said, if it reaches a point where you don't feel it should continue and you can't participate at all anymore, are you going to let it still go? And he said, nope, that's when it ends. And I was like, nah, now everybody. So I was actually like, wow, he really was being sincere at that time when I saw that farewell come out, because he is pulling the plug.
That's right. That's right. No, listen, we want to end on a high note. We don't want to be one of those classic rock bands that starts to go downhill and get fat and, you know, look bad and play bad. And, you know, I mean, none of that. We don't want any of that. We want to go out on a high note. And we feel like the next couple of years, you know, should deliver the end.
Well, I appreciate that sentiment because I believe that fully. Yeah. I mean, I wish all these bands went on forever, but I also believe you can stay too long at the party and damage your legacy. Yeah. And as a fan, that's something I hate when I see that happen. And clearly you're in no jeopardy of that, because having seen Foreigner lately and a few times, it's pretty amazing. And it's amazing. Has Kelly Hansen been in as long as you have, Jeff?
Almost. I joined in 04. He joined in 05, early 05. So close, but it was when he joined that the heavy touring started, of course. And so, yeah, he's on year 19 coming up. So we're all ready for a break from, you know, the constant touring, that's for sure. And yeah, plus, yeah. It'll give me more time to do projects like this.
Well, that's where I'm going. And that's... That's the basis of this whole question, because again, like I said to Dean, if there has been any frustration from fans of Revolution Saints, it's been that the band can't really operate as a band in terms of, we all know you have to tour, you have to be out there to really get people interested in, and because of the other commitments, really haven't been able to do that. So maybe that door is going to open finally. Joel, your thoughts on that? I mean, considering Whitesnake is a question mark, you don't know what's going to happen. You're always going to have TSO around the holidays. But do you hope this is something that you can maybe dig in with a little bit, especially if David isn't going to go out that much?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my whole thing has always been to work hard every day and just see where life kind of takes you. So I'm definitely open to playing live shows with this or with Iconic, you know, the other Frontiers project that I'm a part of. I've told those guys from the get-go, like, let's take it out. Let's do it. So I think, you know, when and if the window opens, you know, I'm definitely ready to go through it, man, and put in the hard work and like try and take it to the next level. I think it's kind of a natural progression as a lot of the older bands do retire or step aside, that some of these projects ascend in importance to the fans, you know, because they're going to want to see a lot of us that were a part of these bands for years and not just completely let go of the scene, you know? So hopefully that happens. I would love to get out there with these guys. I mean, you know, I'm honored to be working with both these cats, man. I mean, they're amazing. And, you know, it would be really, really great to share the stage with them.
And Jeff and Joel, even though this is your first record with Revolution Saints coming out again on April 21st called Eagle Flight, as Dean mentioned, and we've talked about, there are previous records. So you guys coming in, I imagine, assuming you're going to play the previous records as well, when you play live, you've got a catalog of what, 4 records, Dean, to dig into now to actually do a full show.
Oh yeah, dude. I mean, yeah, with the first 3 records, I mean, when we finished that 3rd one, we did the Frontiers Fest. We had a lot to choose from, but we also wanted to touch on some of Jack's stuff, and we wanted, you know, touch on some of Doug's stuff. So it was really cool to be able to, you know, and some of the Journey stuff too. So, you know, I think we can kind of maybe pull some docking tunes out, you know, do some stuff that Joel's done. Hell yes, man. I would love to. It'd be an honor. Are you kidding? I mean, that's my teenage years, man. Docking. I mean, Night Ranger, all that stuff. Are you kidding? I mean, I grew up with it. That's my soundtrack. So to be able to play those and, we got a plethora of stuff.
So Kiss of Death is in the set list then when we do this? Yes. Kiss of Death is in? Is that what we're saying?
I would love that. And Mr. Joel, Scary, dude, and you just turned up.
Yeah, Joel, get ready. Start working up some George Lynch.
Hey, man, I've ripped George off as much as anybody, believe me.
Well, guys,
the difference is Joel can remember his bass player's name.
That's always a good thing.
Jeff, real quick on that. What is, you know, I love George. We all love George. And I love that George is so transparent, because he said during the interview, he goes, look, man, I just, you know, Lynch Mob is a revolving door. I just pick up who I can get for the gigs or whatever. But he loves you. And you guys have had such a history, whether it's End Machine or Dokken or Pilsen Lynch or Tooth and Nail or all these different bands. I mean, what is the bond between you and George that you and him work so well together? No matter what, you're always together.
Just complementary chemistry. I mean, we really do have each other's strengths and weaknesses covered. We really do. And we have tons of endless mutual respect for one another, mutual love. I mean, our sense of humor is real similar. I mean, there's just so many things that we bond over. But I mean, musically, I've told this story many times. The first day George ever came over to my house. He came over. This was 1983, summer of 1983. Comes over to, walks in the door, sees my guitar sitting there, picks it up, and we write a song right there. Before we even said hello, we started working on a song. He walks in, he goes, "Oh, cool!" And he starts playing, and I'm like, "Yeah, that's cool." And you know, I mean, we started doing our thing right away. We just, that's what we do. I mean, we're musical. We love music and we're kids. We're both 15-year-old kids when we start playing. And that's...
Aren't we all?
Yeah, that's really...
I truly believe this. I've said it many times. I'm 58, but I feel like I'm 28. I really do believe that doing what we do keeps us young. I really do. Even if when we get out of, and I can speak for myself, getting out of bed in the morning, there's some creaks now and, you know, my foot hurts, my back hurts, whatever. You still, you know, when you dig into the day, it beats the alternative. That's for sure. So I just want to go around the horn then for everybody and just get some closing thoughts about whether it be Revolution Saints. Again, the record is out April 21st. It's called Eagle Flight. And there is a single and video out now, the latest one, Talking Like Strangers. You can watch that online and hear it online. But we'll start with you, Jeff. So Foreigner, Farewell Run, which goes through 24, I believe, right?
Yeah, at this point, yes.
And then that'll put a button on that and 20 plus years for you in that band. Obviously, mm-hmm. Revolution Saints. And then anything else you want to tell fans to keep an eye open for?
Yeah, well, again, Revolution Saints. Is it still April 24th, by the way, guys? I thought there was
I thought it was changed to July, bro.
I thought it was changed to June or July, too. So we should double check that, guys. I think
I'm looking at a press release. I'm looking at a press release that was sent to me.
I think April is still the release date, but it was the LP manufacturing that was
done. That's what it is.
The LP was kind of sent back. And then,
that's what it is.
Okay. Yeah, if you want vinyl, I know there's a delay on vinyl just in terms of getting that made. So April 21 will be CD and streaming, and then a little bit down the line for people that want vinyl. I'm sorry, Jeff, what else are you saying?
Oh, yeah. Well, so I've got that. I've got the End Machine record that we're working on. That's probably, I believe that's going to come out spring of 24, I think, even though we'll be done with it a long time before that. So that's the End Machine. George and I have a Heavy Hitters record, which that's our pure 100% fun covers project where we cover hit songs, hence Heavy Hitters. And that's coming out. I don't know when that's coming out. I think it's coming out summer, but I'm not sure. And then I'll probably do another Black Swan record in 25. So lots of stuff coming and going to be busy.
And on real quick on End Machine, Robert is not singing anymore or is?
That is correct. He is not singing anymore. We have a singer by the name of Girish Pradhan, who is phenomenal. I mean, he is mind-boggling. He lives in India and he is just insane. And wait till you hear what we got coming. He's got 8 of the songs written and it's really, really powerful.
How did you find a singer in India?
Serafino.
Oh, okay.
Once again. Head of the label.
I thought you were going to say YouTube, which seems to be the common answer to something like that. We found him on YouTube.
Yeah.
Singing in an End Machine tribute.
Oh, my God.
Dean, again, we mentioned you're kicking ass in Journey 50th anniversary tour out there right now. Obviously, you guys could just keep playing and playing and playing because the songs and the catalog are just amazing. Is that the focus for you outside of Revolution Saints right now? Is that the primary thing?
Yeah, right now it's Journey until the end of May. And then I go home and I'm a grandfather and a father and a husband and a best friend and a dog taker care of her guy. that's basically my life. Dude. That, Revolution Saints, and being home with the family, you know, that's enough for me, man. I'm your age, man. I'm 58. I here, 25 years old. Body, not so much. So, you know, I'm not going to slow down by any stretch, but you know, it's good to just to stop and just be with family, smell the roses, so to speak. You know, I missed a lot of it. We all do. We all miss a lot of our stuff when we're out on the road and stuff. So it's always good to have that. That's my foundation. So it's a good thing.
I'm just laughing right now because you kind of dated Pilsen earlier when you said you grew up with him. Well, I think he's around the same age as you. So Jeff, you must have been 15 when you're older than 58, Jeff.
I'm 58, but no, I am. I remember Jeff.
Jeff's giving him the sign like way up. Jeff, I thought you were like.
If I were 58, Eddie, that would have meant I was 18 when I joined Dokken.
Okay. It's possible.
I joined him in 83. So I guess it's possible, but no, yeah. I'm older.
Yeah, I was at Wild Dogs, Eddie. I was at Wild Dogs, and we used to open, Wild Dogs used to open up for Cinema, which is Mike Barney's band, which was Jeff's, Jeff was the bassist, right? Or guitarist, Jeff. You were the bassist,
yeah,
right?
I was a bass player, yep. And
then, you know, and there you go. I mean, it was like, you know, it's just like everybody knows everybody, and yeah, I've known those guys forever.
Yeah, I just had Varney on this show telling his whole story, and he lives in Vegas where I have a second home, so I see him often. And I know there's some deep back old history with you guys with him, right?
Oh, absolutely. Mike got me in Dokken.
Yeah, it's amazing. Mike is we connect a lot of dots with Mike. All right, Joel, we'll let you wrap up here then. Upcoming stuff above and beyond Revolution Saints for you. What's cooking?
Well, I just turned in an album from my side project, Joel Hoekstra's 13. There's two of those out already, Dying to Live and Running Games. And this new one is coming out shortly after this Revolution Saints cycle. I think right as the album is released, people can expect like the first single from that. And so that's Vinnie Appice and Tony Franklin and Derek Sherinian and a new singer who may or may not have been mentioned in this interview, but I think I'm supposed to wait on actually saying that. So,
wait, you got the guy from India too?
Come on now. I'm not allowed to say this right now, I don't believe. I don't know.
There's a lot of incestuous stuff going on here, man. It's just like too much. God. Like,
yes, but I was first. All right.
Oh, my gosh.
So for once I was first on something with this. That's happening later this year. Looking forward to that. I'm going to do, as far as touring goes, just taking like the opposite route and going out with my friend Brandon Gibbs, and we're doing acoustic shows in the US. And we're doing a tour of UK, Ireland, and run in Europe later on in the year, and just kind of, you know, doing what I can in the meantime, holding my, you know, like I said, fingers are like permanently like that for David with Whitesnake. And just obviously just, you know, staying productive. That's my main thing. Like every day has to be productive musically for me to be happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, guys, it's great to talk to all three of you. I appreciate you making the time again. You know them all individually from the different things they do, but they are now the new lineup of the band Revolution Saints, and a new album again, Eagle Flight, coming out April 21st. There's already a single and video online with more to come, I'm sure, leading into the release of the record. And fingers crossed for me, some live shows, because I'd love to see you guys play this stuff live, the old stuff, and, of course, the new record as well. So hopefully we get a chance for that in the U.S. Otherwise, somebody's buying me a plane ticket to Italy, and I got to come. So.
I'll get you the plane ticket, dude. I'll hook you up.
Guys, great to see you. I'm sure I'll see you out there. Stay in touch, and all the best, and congrats on the record. And up, Dean.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. Love you, Jeff. Love you, Joel. Love you, Eddie. Thank you.
Eddie. All right. Yeah. See you guys. Yeah. Well, as mentioned, there was also some video of that interview. You might be able to catch some of that on the SiriusXM app if you're a subscriber. Thank you to Joel and Jeff and Dean, and thanks earlier to Phil Lewis of LA Guns. Again, everything you just heard happened live anywhere over the course of the last 3 to 6 weeks on my daily radio show, Trunk Nation, Faction Talk, SiriusXM Channel 103, every day, live, 3 to 5 Eastern Time. Be sure to check it out either over the air live or anytime on the SiriusXM app. And if you're not already on board with us at SiriusXM, please subscribe so you do not miss anything. You can join me every day and interact for live rock talk on Faction Talk Channel 103. Thanks to Joel Pollack. Thank you for listening and subscribing. See you guys next Thursday for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Take care.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Meet the next generation of podcast stars with SiriusXM's Listen Next program, presented by State Farm. As part of their mission to help voices be heard, State Farm teamed up with SiriusXM to uplift diverse and emerging creators. Tune in to Stars and Stars with Issa as host Issa Nakazawa dives into birth charts of her celeb guests.
This is just the start of a new wave of podcasting. Visit statefarm.com to find out how we can help prepare for your future. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.